Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
And good morning. Good morning, guys. Chris and Andy. Always like to ask how the week in real estate was. And so let's get it underway, guys.
Good morning.
Hey, what's happening?
Well, I'll tell you what, Denny. We're going to talk about a lot of different things today. We're going to skip the market because I don't want to have to say I told you so, Andy. Sorry, but we did say about interest rates have been...
Yeah, rates have been creeping up just a little bit. I think it's, you know, there's a lot. The bond market's been just absolutely crazy this week, and I only know this through hearing through my, you know, preferred
lender
partners.
People, yeah.
But it's been, I've been watching where it's important to get those rates locked in, and people were struggling. I mean, there was a lot of, you know, in real estate, Chris, you know, it's not always perfect. And the old days of a house being, you know, purchased and closed and everything in 30 days, it's a perfect scenario, but a lot of times it doesn't happen quite like that. So you have, you know, appraisal issues, or you may have home inspection, you may have whatever challenges that will delay a closing. Well, if you have that rate locked in, it's really a challenge to get that. Sometimes when the rates are jumping that aggressively, it's hard to get that locked in without spending a lot of money.
So. Yeah. You know, when you say that a deal doesn't get done in 30 days, I just, this past week, I was kind of sitting back and we had a couple listings that sold that have inspections, that have long inspections, but how the inspection times work now, we've talked about this a few times. Hey, we need 10 days to do it. Mm-hmm. And they do it at day 9, you know? And then so on day 10, we're trying to figure it out. And then you have to extend and extend and extend. And I was chuckling while you were saying that because I'm like, gosh, by the time you actually sell it, you think you sold it. Mm-hmm. By the time you actually go to pending, I mean, could be 2 weeks later.
Yeah, I know.
In a lot of cases. So.
It's crazy. And you know, and I think
and then
that
people
they're...
don't start the loan until that inspection's done. So now you already lost 2 weeks, and now you got to go get the appraisal ordered.
Well, and a lot of times with real estate, too, I think a lot of people are you know, looking upon us as real estate agents to be the guides of the experience. And, you know, when you sit there and you have all of these delays or you have, you know, things that are out of our control, it's hard not to get frustrated. And so, you know, like in our jobs, I always tell new agents that I said your job is almost as much as a counselor as it is to be a guide and an educator. So it's you know, keeping people in the loop and then understanding those contracts, I think, is so important in today's market where you know exactly what you're getting your client into and then you know what to expect from the other side of the transaction.
And I'll tell you what, the agent has to know that. I've been involved in so many deals that these people come to close and they're like, what? I didn't know this. You know, we just had that last week. We had a phone call that said they didn't know they had to pay for the propane.
Right.
It was in the tank. I mean, that's in the purchase agreement. And I mean, that should be explained. And so, yeah, it's an interesting thing. You know, we've got a lot of things to talk about today. We're going to kind of talk about little trends, different things that do they make you money? Do they not make you money? People always like to hear about that stuff. I always get comments on that, kind of the little the tidbits and stuff. And one of the things that I wanted to talk about was the sheds, maybe more like a livable shed.
Mm-hmm.
How about just a shed?
But like
a
the commercial
on
TV, the Sheila's She Shed.
Sheila's?
And her,
she
it was shed? On fire.
Really?
And then she was going to go to a Shear.
Like Herm's
She Shed?
He shed?
Yeah,
oh,
exactly.
Something like that, yeah.
But that was her little getaway in the backyard. And I think that that is a great example of when people are living in a house and they have their needs change. Maybe now they're officing from home or they, you know, they want to have an artistic, you know, studio or they want to have the place to just go and be quiet. Or meditate or whatever. I mean, you know, yoga, whatever. We're seeing the use of sheds in today's world being used a lot more frequently than you thought. And then, Chris, I know you and I both know this, but we're not just talking about the do-it-yourself or shed that they, you know, drag from the home improvement store and stick in the backyard. I mean, some of these properties, you know, and those of us that went to the state fair, you walk around and you look at even the shed companies that were showing sheds with windows. And then they have insulation packages now. And then they say, hey, you know, do you want a footing? It costs this to put footings down, or you want insulate? You want so it's pretty extravagant. It can go.
So why wouldn't people just add on to their house?
I think it's a cost thing. There's a little bit of an illusion, I believe, that these she sheds are going to cost you less. And what's really interesting, Chris, I'm glad you brought that up. When you look at new construction and you look at like a you know, the cost of new construction, let's say it's, you know, $200, $150 a square foot, whatever, you know, style of house you pick, it varies. And then you look at a shed and, you know, let's say a 10 by 10 shed's $1,400 for a quality built shed. Well, you know, you're almost at the same cost per square foot as actual built home. So you're in that case, you're probably very right on the money. But I think there's this illusion that when we have the, quote, she shed or man cave in the back, it's away from the house. And I think there's a little bit of that, I don't want to say the word fantasy, but a little bit of that, you know, I'm getting away, right? That little place to go hide on your own property and really enjoy the things that you enjoy, a happy place, right?
Well, I think, too, I think there's a couple things, too, extra on that is that sometimes sheds don't count against your impervious surface.
Right.
If they're not on, like, footings.
Correct.
You know?
Yep.
And the other part is that you can really create your shed and get past maybe some lines and some mm-hmm. setback spots. So say you want it on the back corner of your lot mm-hmm. that overlooks this beautiful pond, and you're going to turn it into kind of an office. You can put it back there, but you could never enhance your house to be able to go back to that far to do it.
Right. You know, and I've seen that where we actually have – I've actually helped families where they've done that, and then they have the remitter or whatever it's called on their internet, you know, and they have, so they're totally drawing a blank on the name of, but anyway, your signal that goes out into your house for your Wi-Fi.
Wi-Fi, okay.
Yeah, and they're actually doing a remitter down. Thank you.
So what's your sound? Okay.
I'll buy you lunch now.
Yeah,
thanks,
thank
bud.
You. Thank you.
Appreciate the help. The routers that are out there.
That's expensive, by the way.
It is. Lunch and then you... Not where I eat. Maybe on your side of town, but we don't have steaks that much. Anyway, so going kind of back to this, I mean, it depends. Are you going to bring plumbing out there? Are you going to want to have, you know, like,
there you go.
Let's say you make a hot yoga house, right? And you actually want to do a little steam unit out there and you actually tile the whole thing and it's really cool or whatever. You know, obviously you would want to tile your floor, you'd burn your toes, but, yeah. You know, the concept is there. You can do anything you want.
What about actually just plugging it in? Because, I mean, these sheds, I mean, do they give you value, or is it something that, you know what, I really want to take my shed to the next place too?
It's a good point.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's why, you know, when you talk to an appraiser is going to tell you, yeah, hey, wonderful, you know, asset for the homeowner, but it doesn't improve your value.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm sure the appraisals won't give nothing towards it. Maybe
yeah.
a pole barn that's sitting there, they give that something. But I'll tell you what, though, I mean, things unique like that. That can be a differentiator in a house. We always talk about, hey, that was the house with the pool, or that was the house with the, you know, the big center island. That was the mm-hmm. house with the Sheila's she shed, you know?
Yep. Well, and, you know, and I think one other quick, aspect of that to think about is when you are taking on a project like that, you know, whatever use you're going to do with it, you do see a lot of online opportunities to order the shed. It comes in on the pallets. You put it together yourself. Keep in mind, though, that a lot of sheds are not created equal. I mean, there's different, weather bands where some of these sheds are built down south and they're not used to having snow loads. And then on top of the snow load, you decide to add insulation and sheetrock. And all of a sudden you're adding twice the weight load that roof is really rated for. So, you know, in that perspective, you might want to go sit down with the do-it-yourselfer store and say, hey, if we hand built this and you have a kit, we provided the materials, can we beef up the roof so that we can actually put, you know, whatever you want on there, maybe a weather vane or a cupola or whatever you want to put on the top of the thing. For fun, you know, just to decorate it as well.
Yeah. I've seen some in person, but they're more like gardener shed type things, mm-hmm. you know, where they get, you know, kind of have the cute little flower boxes and they can open the windows, but mm-hmm. then they just have tools hanging in there and maybe a table to be able to do their potting. But
what a great spot to stage, though. I mean, you know, like you sell lifestyle when you're on the lake, right? You sell that lifestyle. And so you have a potting shed that's all ready to go. It's got everything set up in there so somebody can visualize, oh my gosh, how awesome. I'm already plugged in, ready to roll. Or like, you know, on the lake, you have the boathouses, the same thing. They've got the water skis hanging up on the wall. They've got all the life jackets ready to go. And it just sells that place, I think, a million times over.
Totally. And you turn those little boathouses into maybe putting a bed in there, and mm-hmm. it becomes the perfect getaway. Or, oh, boy, I could maybe VRBO that kind of thing. And so, yeah, those things are obviously real important parts there. But I was going to say something. I was on the line. But, oh, I was going to say that I've only seen the really crazy sheds, like, online. I've just never seen one in person.
Right.
Have you ever seen
one? Yeah, actually, there was one up. I just showed a house recently up in Brooklyn Park that actually was beyond a shed. It actually started as a shed and then became a pool house, and they actually did the, Benihana style flat top grill. And so they were sitting by the pool. They made an extension, a covered area, so they could actually have all their friends sitting around when they're at the pool doing the vegetables and the stir fry right by the pool. And then that turned into, well, let's make this a changing room. So let's add a – then they had to get the permits, right? At that point, when you're adding footings and you're adding an extra dwelling and you're putting plumbing in there, you're putting electric, insulation, now you're kind of falling into the building codes. Or, I mean, I shouldn't a little bit. You should a lot, actually. Most cities will require even to put a shed in, so.
I guess break time, huh?
Yes. Yes, it is. Hang on, guys. We'll be back with more of the Real Estate Show here on News Talk 830 WCCO. 61 degrees, guys, 61 degrees in the Twin Cities. Now let's get more real estate talk here on CCO. Here again, Chris and Andy.
Yeah, we're back, and we are talking. We've been talking about Sheila's She Shed, now that famously Mr. Pransky has labeled it. But, you know, even like an extra shed. So if you have a two-car garage, you know, rather than trying to add that third stall, getting a decent shed in there that – I'd be cautious and don't just put one door in there. Maybe put the double doors so you can get lawnmowers in there and bikes and all that extra stuff. And it makes people feel like it could justify for that third stall.
I agree. I think there's a lot to be said with that. And the other thing quickly, I had a text from a client of mine here that was talking about making sure that the associations will allow you to accommodate this project. So, you know, because a lot of them don't.
Sure. No.
Yep. And so all of a sudden you buy that like detached townhouse that has a two-car garage. And then they don't allow sheds or something like that. So just make sure as you're buying your next property or you're looking at it, you have the ability to do this. And then I think this is, though, Chris, this might be part of the inventory problem we're having, too. I mean, a lot of people, I know it sounds crazy, but a lot of people are doing alternative projects like this that make the house that they're in livable.
Stay longer.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, you know, and that's not a bad thing because, I mean, I'll tell you, I was just talking to a client the other day, and we were going through it, and they said, you know, we love our house. If we could just pick it up and put it somewhere else, you know, because maybe it was just a little too maybe close to the other people. But it's kind of like, you know, you could probably create some privacy with some huge trees and stuff like that. Yep. And, you know, but it costs money. They got to pay us to sell it. You know, you got to go and buy another one. But I also think there's that part of you get to a portion of your life, it's just like, you know what? I want to do something different, you know, and get into something different.
So and that's probably why you installed your karaoke shed.
Yeah, exactly, because I am going to be a singer someday. You know, I always wanted to learn how to sing. I did, but I never did, and I couldn't play an instrument.
For hours, you're out there in your shed just singing away.
Yeah, exactly. That's awesome. What do you think about a pole barn?
Man, that's my best friend. I love pole barns. I mean, I think they could, you know, in some cases, like in the right application, you know, out on the farm or out in the, you know, up in the cabin or whatever, they can be done tastefully. Because, you know, the reason why you do a pole barn is more affordable. You can get more ground space. You have higher ceilings and it's obviously.
You need land to put it on, though.
Yeah, you do. Know? Now, the other side of it, I've been in developments where you pull in, there's a beautiful $500,000-$700,000 house, and then there's a pole shed right next to it. That detours from the look of the rest of the neighborhood because now you got a tin shed up.
That's the reason they have covenants.
Correct.
And associations and, you know, so those things don't hurt you later on. But sometimes you get into those developments that anything goes. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times in that kind of place you're talking about, they usually state that, hey, it has to look like the house and it's got to be approved before you put it up.
Well, you know, when if you do the math, I mean, you know, garage space is usually right around that. You know, when you're building, it's $40 to $44 a square foot. So, you know, when you look at like a three-car detached garage on a property, a builder with a concrete floor, electric in the building, sided nicely to match the house, nice roof and soffits that match your house and everything else, I mean, you could spend $34,000 to $36,000 on a three-car garage, and for $36,000, you can get a really big pole barn. So I think, obviously, that's the...
Yeah, no, totally.
The differentiator.
And, yeah, and trying to keep the values up on those. So, yeah, and... I've seen a lot of different things with pole barns. I mean, and a lot of things that are important to people and maybe not so important, but access and height of the doors and the height of the ceilings inside. You know, there's a lot of people that you can't just build a warehouse and have, you know, 200 feet long by 40 feet wide. And so if you get the higher ceilings, they can start stacking stuff in there. You know, it's important. I've seen it too where, you know, you get that pole shed. You get the house, I mean, and it's all about marketing. You got to, so depending on what price range you're in, but say we have a house, but we have a super awesome pole barn.
Right.
that the husband's going to love. Let's just say it's the husband. He wants to be in the pole barn. Mm-hmm. He's got toys. He's got trucks. He's got cars or whatever,
right.
you know, that he wants to do in there. And you just have to get the house to a point that the wife will agree to move there with them and that they could do something with it. So sometimes it's, you know, your focus might be on that building even more so than the house to be able to get it sold. But you might not have to do everything to that house to make it work. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, let me be blunt. I have buyers that only want to buy a property that has the pole barn up and ready to go because they have a busy life. They have those toys, horses, whatever that are in need of that space immediately. And we won't even look at properties that don't have it. So it's like it's a whole different category of housing where you have, you know, generally
kind of like
you
a
have
pool.
The barn. No. Right. Which is an interesting conversation, too. Yeah. But I mean, usually you have acreage when you have a pole barn or an accessory building.
Yeah,
but what we were kind of starting the show off, those that didn't hear, what we were talking about having the man cave, she shed, you know, on-site office studio. And it's almost like that same version. It's just for, you know, instead of having car hobbies, maybe you have yoga or art studio or whatever in the backyard. Mm. And making sure that you obviously follow the right permitting and everything else. But sometimes with a temporary shed, there's a lot of people that look the other way and say, oh, there's a shed. No big deal. They don't know what you're doing inside that shed.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot more forgiveness than permission a lot of times, you know.
No, as long as we're on this topic, too, another big thing is chicken coops.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people love their chicken coops. I mean, there's like, you go on the internet. I had a house with a chicken coop probably 6-7 years ago, and I just decided to Google it. And I just was like, oh, my gosh, there's like almost a cult following for these chicken coops, you know? And so it was one of the things that we kind of focused on, you know, with that listing, and it sold pretty darn quick.
That's an interesting point. So I'm going to be pro and con on that, right? So I everybody loves their fresh eggs and their, you know, or pets or whatever they want to use the chicken on their property for. But on the other hand, cock-a-doodle-doo at, you know, 4 or 5 in the morning, you know what I mean? It's like that, and I didn't do it. You're waiting for me to do it, I know. But, I mean, we have a project that I have over in Lionel Lakes, and the neighbor behind us is on acreage. And, I mean, throughout the day in an insulated home, I can hear that several times a day, And anyway, but it's almost a little bit distracting. But then now, if you're from the farm, maybe that's inviting to you, and maybe that actually makes you feel like you're at home again. So, you know, there's pros and cons to everything, I think.
But even if you don't use the chicken coop, there's this thing about a chicken coop, you know, that you could put your tools and stuff in there. But it's the old chicken coop, and it kind of gives a historical factor. Yeah, so you don't need the – how did you do that? Cock-a-doodle-doo?
Cock-a-doodle-doo.
Yeah, that one.
I think that – yeah.
Yeah, that was good. But, yeah, so all little things like that that you can make unique, I think are really good for the value of your home.
So what do you think about being a good neighbor then, you know, and having the so do you – I mean
– neighbors?
Not all of us have a moat around our properties, Chris, but those of us that don't have the moat and wall – do you think you suggestively as a real estate agent would talk to the neighbors first, or you just do it and then ask for forgiveness? What's your strategy on that?
I mean, if it's legal, I don't know why they can't do it.
Right.
You know,
God bless America.
Yeah,
I get it.
For neighbors. Yep. I mean, it is something. I mean, I think it's nice in which to do that for somebody, but if if that's what you want for your house, I mean,
right.
It's not like you're putting in a racetrack or something.
Well, but, you know, let's say that they do want the chicken coop in their backyard and one neighbor doesn't care and you do care on the other side. And we're sitting there and you say, okay. And you now, by asking them or they asking you what your thoughts are, they'll put the chicken coop on the other side of their property, for an example, being the good neighbor, right?
Yeah.
So then in that case.
I think that's awesome.
But it also could go the other way. And all of a sudden you have a property dispute or a boundaries dispute of exactly where you can put it and what the rules are.
That if you go ask nicely to your neighbor, hey, just thinking I'm going to put it in a chicken coop, and they said, no way, don't do it. You're like, well, no, I want to do it. I'm still going to do it. I mean, it could turn out worse.
Can you attach technically a chicken coop to your karaoke shed out in the backyard Chris?
Yeah, it's a barn dance. It's called a barn dance. Yeah.
You're one of a kind, brother.
Yeah. Oh, I am? Oh, my gosh. Okay, so talking about sheds and stuff like that. How about other maybe projects that can make us money, make sellers money?
Well, that's interesting. So you look at obviously going from the outside of the house, you think of the inside.
What do you think about hardwood floors?
I love
or
them.
The new engineered floors.
Engineered,
put them in the basement. How about that?
Okay, so flippers put in the engineered floors or the, you know, they're the next level above like the Pergo click together floors. Nothing wrong with him. They get a lot of years out of him. But where as a long-term hold, it's a little challenging because you don't have the ability to refinish that, you know, wood-topped engineered floor. Versus a three-quarter inch, you know, solid floor, you can actually refinish, you know, three, four, five times, depending on how careful you are with that floor. So that's a 100-year floor versus maybe a 10-year floor.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So, but, I mean, for if I'm turning around to sell.
Most flippers use the engineered product because they're pretty.
Yeah.
The colors are cooler. They have that hand-scraped look to them, so it adds texture to the floor, which is kind of fun, too. So if there's any imperfections, maybe your floor is not perfectly level, and some of these older houses works out great, you know, because it kind of helps you feel like your floor has been leveled out without having somebody downstairs jacking up the old floor trusses or whatever.
We're going to hit on some more of these, but before we go to break, I want to say one that I've talked about for years, and I think it's such a huge deal, is garage doors.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's typically the biggest thing that you see when you're coming up to the house. I mean, that's mm-hmm. out there. And having a real nice garage door, I mean, at any price point, can completely change the look of that house.
So what do you mean by nice?
What do I mean by nice?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe a wood look or an old historic look with the iron, you know, the...
Yeah, the carriage house kind of look
to
it. Yeah,
carriage house style. Yeah.
Yep.
Just something, you know, lights or not lights, but they call them lights, but windows that are in there too. Different styles. I mean, if it's a contemporary
But so let me ask you this. So I because I just had this priced out. So those are actually, you know, a set of garage doors, three stalls wide, double door, single door. You're almost at $7,000 for a set of wood looking, not real wood. Real wood, triple that. Almost double it.
I know.
And then, so do we get the ROI?
Yeah. Well, let's go to break and we'll talk about it.
All right, we'll do that. We'll be right back after this quick break. Both Chris and Andy, stand by.
We're back. Andy, you were trying to ruin my garage door thing by telling people how expensive they were.
Oh, I thought you'd bring up the Kuroki shit again.
No, that's not. They have nice garage doors on that, too. But anyways, so let's talk about that. You said, what, $7,000?
Yeah, we just had
nice
it done.
That's three stalls?
So yeah, but I have a weird size, though. True, as a disclaimer, I have an 18-foot wide door instead of a 16, and I have both of
those
my doors
awesome,
8 feet high.
Yeah.
It is, but, you know, man, I'll tell you what, those doors are heavy. When you have an insulated sandwich door and you have that garage door opener that's pulling it up, I've ripped the actual brackets out of my door three different times. I had to install a full-length bracket on that door so I don't have the issues. Because, I mean, of course, it breaks when you're trying to get to an appointment or, you know, I've already left and my wife's trying to get out of the house and now she can't. Literally, the garage door is broken. It was a mess.
Yeah, we bought a house with an old redwood door and the spring snapped. Try lifting that thing and getting out. Oh my gosh.
That's probably thousands of pounds. Yeah. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Well, I lifted it just so you know.
So but anyways. It was hollow. Yeah. You know, you have hollow core doors in the house. They had a hollow core garage door.
Actually, my wife helped me, but you got to give her credit. She's probably stronger anyways. But, okay, so, but garage doors, I'm telling you, I really think that's a monster impact. Because a lot of garage doors, if they've been there a long time, there's something wrong with them. There's some dents in them. There's some baseballs that were thrown at them. You know, there's, you know, maybe the car backed into them a little. And it's the first thing you see.
Well, I was just going to say, because, you know, you look at the architectural aspect of housing, right? And back in the early 1900s, late 1800s, didn't have garages. You just had the house. And so the house was pretty on all four sides. And then you get into where we do the Minneapolis style, you know, where it's urban. You have the alleyways. You have garages in the back if you really had a lot of money. Otherwise, you didn't have a garage in the back, and it was an option. And then you get into the Brooklyn centers of the world that have the Ramblers, you know, the back in the day, the Orrin Thompsons that were cranking up the Ramblers one after another. If you were rich, you had a 1.5 story. If you were really rich, you had a garage, you know. But what was kind of crazy about that is that as we've changed, nowadays you look at the parade of homes and you look, every garage is, in my opinion, very garage dominant because garages have become a big part of our world. And I agree with you that in the last probably two decades here, garage doors have become a bigger part of the front architecture on the home, more so than ever. And it's, a lot of it has to do with the way the lots are designed. The lots are narrower nowadays and people still want the three-car garage. You just have nowhere to put the garage, so you literally have to sprawl it across the front so you have a three-car garage and a one front door.
Yeah, you're starting to see builders kind of turn their garage sideways and then put like a third stall the other way, so maybe it's a little longer just to try to take
tandems.
That you know, that massive garage door look from the front and kind of get it more of a house front.
You know, Meg Dean, great friend of ours and great builder, Mega Homes up in Dayton, she's done that for years where they actually do the tandem garage so that the house is not garage dominant.
Yeah.
And it's designed that you notice the house first and, oh, by the way, here's this cute little garage off to the side. And then it's usually a tandem double deep. But that also is conducive only when you have a lot that is flat. Because if you have a walkout lot, bringing that garage that level all the way back, you're getting into spancrete, you're getting into engineering of the walls. And all of a sudden that garage can go from a $40 square foot to $150 square foot without blinking. So you have to be very lot sensitive, you know, in that situation.
Yeah. You know, and then I think it's sometimes the garage is kind of an afterthought, you know, that someone, hey, I want this big garage, but mm-hmm. they don't kind of really look at the impact that it brings when you're looking at it from right. straight on. So, but, you know, you're talking about an 18-foot wide garage door mm-hmm. versus a 16-foot. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, every time I go into a house, I notice that every time, and I point it out, and also mm-hmm. with 8 foot high. And I think that's real important, that extra 2 feet, especially with the size of vehicles now.
Yeah.
You know, and the big side lights and all that kind of stuff. It's
you just don't have to worry about ripping your mirrors off. Like, I mean, and that's right. what, I mean, not to poor little Lisa, but she's been in the garage a couple of times where when she's backing out, that mirror's right there, and it's like, you know, and so with backup cameras and everything else, it makes it a lot easier nowadays. But I tell you, it's very hard. Depth perception and width perception with a garage that's really narrow and you're trying to pull in there. So it's like, even if you have smaller cars, it's challenging for anybody. So a little wider of a garage door when the lot's conducive, I think, goes a long way. Even like the third stall, I put 10-foot wide doors on there. So when you're pulling a trailer in there, you have an 8-foot wide trailer. You actually have a foot on each side.
So you're not hitting everything.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
But I'll tell you, here's the other part about that. And this is what I was getting to before you kind of went on your rant. But anyways, sorry.
You can shut my mic off. You guys know that, right?
Yeah, okay. Exactly. Okay. But anyways, that how many times that I've noticed that, but it's never called out mm-hmm. in the marketing net. And to me, when you have that sort of stuff, you have to say that because that's a differentiator.
Yeah.
You know, when they say, well, you know what? That did have an 18-foot door. And people justify these things and kind of, and you never know what's going to hit their buttons, you
right,
know?
Right.
And so you have to be able to market that and get people that information.
You know, Chris, I think that's a great actual point is that, you know, when you have a licensed professional that knows actually what they're doing and they're walking through that house and they can notice things like the extra garage space, or they notice that the cabinets are 42 inch tall, or that they have taller, you know, comfort height toilets throughout the house versus the little ones, you know, and it's like the, I mean, jokingly aside about that, I mean, there are a lot of those differences that take a house from being a $400,000 house to a $600,000 house, the creature comforts, the extra things that are there. And it's, you just, you know, when you're, again, obviously I'm very agent, pro agent. So, I mean, when you take the time to spend and meet with the right agents will point that stuff out to you and help you with your resale tremendously.
Yeah, for sure. You know, more things I think impact just freshening up your landscape.
Yep.
You know, and sometimes you can do that. Obviously, with rock or with mulch and stuff like that.
My good old buddy mulch.
You like mulch.
I
can never get the right stuff though. I mean, yeah. It's like okay, I got 7 bags, and it's like mm-hmm. oh god, I need 20.
Well, the phones are going to light up here, but I these ground up pallets. Okay, I get it. You know, it's a great way to recycle the pallets, and they dye them so that they actually have you know whatever color you're looking for, and then they deliver these to the house. They rot faster. They lose their color pretty darn quick. And to be organic and natural, it kind of defeats the purpose if you put a bunch of, you know, really good dyes in there. So it becomes a maintenance thing, you know, with mulch. And so I like, you know, like the shredded, you know, either we'll do a cedar or the cypress where it's actually, you know, they have their own anti, what do you call that? They basically last longer. I'm losing my words. I should drink another cup of coffee.
I'll let you talk on this one.
No, but anyway, so they have natural, they fight insects, they fight, you know, whatever. And then they will keep the weeds from growing through just because of the chemical that's in there. We should actually bring Blueberry back in here and talk about that.
He could. Yeah. That's Pat Remick with Greenside Landscape.
Yeah, we should bring him back in there because he actually knows these terms and phrases. But
we're
anyway,
try.
But no, I mean, that's a great way to get a bag of mulch or two and actually freshen up that landscape and get it looking good now because I'll tell you, come spring, you're not going to be able to sneak out there when all the dead plants, and I always say the same thing, trim up everything as it starts dying off, unless you want that visual in your snow. Sometimes it is fun to leave the, you know, ornamental grasses, you know, taller, and then the, you know, snow nestles around them. It looks really nice. So if you're selling in the winter, it can be a nice asset.
Okay. One more break.
Yes, indeed. We have more show to come, so don't go away. More real estate show here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Sunshine in the Twin Cities right now, 61 degrees. And let's get back to the real estate show here on 830 WCCO. And here again, Chris and Andy.
Yeah, so the parade started last weekend and kind of going here again.
Shockwave was on time this week, by the way. Thank you for pointing that out last week that I was running a little behind last week.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Chris. I know, Danny.
Okay.
Danny.
Well. He's laughing.
I think my mic's getting shut off. Yeah. When you're running around with that parade of homes, there's a lot of things that are there. Obviously, consumer impressions, number one, reputation, the actual way to – how does the house make you feel? And so what I think is so cool about the parade of homes, you know, .org, you go out there, you can not only shop these different houses, but you can – when you're looking at homes, the reason why I think it's good to go look at a whole bunch of them is you actually get the feel of the home, you know, the livability, and you're in the house. And how does it feel like if you came in from the garage, your kids are coming home with their school books and they, you know, chuck them into the corner, or do you have lockers now? And then that's organized chaos, as I call it. But, I mean, you know, maybe that's something that's important to you, or maybe you have a homework station right off of the garage. Or you come in and all of a sudden there's a flex room where this could be a kid's playroom. It could be an office. It could be a formal dining. It could be a piano room or whatever. And then how does that house make you feel? You know, so it's, I think it's cool. And then, you know, like a lot of people now are asking me multi-generational questions like, hey, I want to put a main floor, you know, bedroom on the house. How much does that cost? And then, you know, most people say, okay, we'll put mom and dad down in the basement because it's a lot cheaper to finish the basement than it is to put an addition
on. Yeah, right. What do you think of traffic? I mean, I thought you'd get more on Saturday because it's opening football season and the Vikings and stuff, and we got more on Sunday than we got on Saturday.
We had on the North Metro, we had almost twice the traffic on Saturday that we did on Sunday.
Really?
Yeah, okay. Vikings games usually, when the Vikings are on, we just don't have a lot happening. And then about the end of the fourth quarter, like we've talked about before, people start depending on the score of the game, people start wandering out, you know? And then we actually will get busy from that, you know, 3 to 6 or whatever it is. But it's we had almost twice the traffic counts on Saturday.
We have a really unique model. Ours is number 116. It's almost $1.6 million. Mm-hmm. But it's on an acreage, so it's on like almost 6 acres of land. But what we did is we did a 550-foot driveway.
Very cool.
550-foot, and then he lined it with big trees. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's super cool. I always wanted that house, and it sits up on a hill, you know, with this long driveway.
Yep.
But then we were thinking about, geez, it's 550 feet. I mean, that's a long ways. Yeah. We should get, like, maybe a golf cart or something and, you know, drive people back and forth. Mm-hmm. And we decided not to because I'm like, gosh, we got to get the feel for it. I mean, that gives you the whole feel because it's more than just your house.
Right.
You know, it's the whole setting. It's the lifestyle. And everyone, I'd always ask them about the driveway because it's the thing with me. Mm-hmm. And everyone was like, no, that was great. You kind of really get a feel for it because there's a golf course on one side, which is Heritage Links Golf Course.
Oh, yeah.
And you come up and you see wetland and you're kind of getting the view of the whole place. And we actually orientated the house that the back is really facing the front. And cool. But it has great views. But so you're kind of like trying to figure it out the whole time you're going up there. And so that was kind of neat. So.
Yeah, well, it sounds like it's very majestic and creates a feeling like we were just talking about. You know, if you're looking for that, pull up the driveway and fall in love with your house every time you pull up the driveway. That sounds like a great opportunity to do that. Now, I look at that, and I'm such a power, like, equipment guy. Like, for me, I'd pull up to that house, and you'd say, this is where you keep your tractor. And you'd have a nice little tractor over there, four-wheel drive with a blower on it.
Yeah.
I would think that'd be fantastic. And see, I get excited thinking about it ready to snow.
You need it for that 550-foot.
My
driveway.
My kids think I'm weird because I get excited when it snows. I love to go out there and snowblow the driveway. I love mowing the grass. I love all that.
You snowblow your pond.
I do. Yeah. Well, I've got those little fish down there. I want to make sure they get enough oxygen so I let the light through. But last year, my goodness, we had 3 feet of snow on top of that pond.
When you take out the snow, it kind of freezes deeper because you don't have the insulation.
So I'm technically killing my fish. Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, great. So next year I will not do that.
It's all right.
Yeah,
fish killer, but
easy karaoke beer burner.
I have done karaoke before.
I know
it was in Cold Spring. Yeah, so it was not very memorable at all. But all right, so what were we talking about? The parade of homes.
Nobody made you sing Queen.
The parade
by the way.
Of homes. You know, another thing that you said. Yeah. This is a good statement, but thinking about, you know, these builders now are thinking the way that we all live rather than trying to figure, hey, this is the most cost effective, and this is what we do, and it's what they want. Mm-hmm. They're looking more towards us. And you said the kids come in and throw their books somewhere, and
yep.
they're accounting for that kind of stuff, like how we really live.
Well, true, and I think that, you know, Chris, that's it's super insightful that they do that. I think that it's only, you know, obviously it's going to help more sell more homes because people now think, oh wow, I'd really love to have a kids' gaming area because instead of our TV where we watch TV, now we don't have to have the game all over the floor. We can actually have them have their own little area to play games. You know, it's interesting how housing needs have evolved. But I think that also helps compound the problem we have with affordability because now they're building what we want. But, you know, just like a Rolls Royce, I mean, it may have all the features I'm looking for in a car, but it also has the Rolls Royce budget. So, you know, having that Chevrolet level of amenities and kind of balancing that out, I think is the real successful builders. That's what they're keying in on.
And the trick is to get kind of a splash of some of those really cool things. So yeah. They feel like, oh my gosh, I mean, here's the greatest amenities and that's what I want. And I think that is.
Like well, that's said, like insightful. In our model that I have, like last weekend we had the wine and cheese party up in Blaine and it tremendous turnout, by the way. Thank you all the listeners that came up. We had some great conversations. We have a sport court on that house.
Oh.
And people say, what's a sport court? Well, it's technically an indoor gym. I mean, we have a 20 by 22 foot gym with a basketball hoop and we have a hockey shooting wall. And so meaning that it's all concrete so that the kids can just slap shot away. And, you know, with the optional ice that we can put in there for about $4,300, you could even be on your skates if you wanted to be.
Yeah. So how do you sell that later then? I mean, hey, you got a sport court now, your kids are gone. How do you evolve?
Thank you for asking, Chris.
Yes, you're welcome.
We actually multipurpose those rooms. So for an example, like let's say that you in the future visualize that space as being a future garage or hobby shop, a wood shop or whatever, because it is a taller area. So you can do garage lifts in there. You could have a lot of fun with it. We've also
you set it up for like
frame in a header. Yeah, we put a header across the back for future garage door.
Okay.
Frame the whole wall in. You finish it, but it's there if you want it. The other thing we can do is we can actually set so that the floor trusses from the main floor could be extended over top of that sport court, so you could fill it in and actually have two additional floors of your home.
Oh God! It may be because usually that's obviously probably on the main floor then.
Yep.
That you could do that ceiling and build a craft room later on or
exactly
now,
yep, or that, the bedroom that's room. the thing that gets a little tricky
or
is plumbing.
Master bedroom
right exactly
okay.
The plumbing gets tricky but we can future size everything with the heating and everything else so it's ready to go. We conveniently do the home runs for the electric so it's ready to go, and then you know let's say for an extra $15,000 you can set yourself up so that in the future you can actually make double that as a finished square footage in the house.
Brilliant. And I'll tell you, and that's what I'm talking about when it comes to selling houses. You got to give people those options. Some people might think, oh my gosh, I don't want a sport court. I don't need it. I don't have anything that this way. But hey, here's what we've got. We can renovate this.
Thing. Grandkids love sport courts. Yeah. Just so those grandparents that have those sport courts and the kids always want to come over to your house, it's a great trick.
If you want to see us, it's andyandrooney.com. Andyandrooney.com. And then you can get all of us.
Good deal. And I hope you guys come back again next week with more of the Real Estate Show every Saturday here on CCO in the 10 o'clock hour.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.